I'd like to introduce Matt Dobson here. He's the social student national organiser and he also on the Youth Fight for Jobs steering committee. So Matt's going to speak about 40 minutes and then we'll open up for questions, then discussion.
Okay. Well, comrades, the economic crisis really means the stepping up of the neoliberal policies in education. And that's at all levels. From September, New Labour made £2 billion worth of cuts in education as a whole, across all levels. I'll just say one brief thing about schools, because I think in schools, what we'll see in the next few years is big industrial struggles, but also communities, working class communities, defending schools from huge cuts and closures. And I think, you know, when the Tories have announced that they will look towards the Swedish model for schools, and by a Swedish model, I don't mean a social democratic model, I mean a neoliberal model, because in Sweden there are so-called free independent schools which are run by private companies who then receive a contribution from local authorities and councils to run their schools. For every pupil they teach they get money from local councils and then they have a choice as to how much money they will invest in those schools, and they have total control over the courses that are taught in those schools, how those schools are run. And I think that represents a dream, really, for the British capitalist class in terms of how they want to run education. And I think throughout this introduction, you know, I'll make this point again and again, that from the point of view of the bosses and from the point of view of their class, the capitalist class, then education really is something they look at in terms of running on the cheap. They want the minimum investment and they want the maximum return. And they would rather that private companies have a say in running courses, that private companies take the responsibility of running universities, but that any losses that are made are put onto the backs of ordinary working class people. There's also FE colleges as well, and we've seen strikes this term in FE colleges in London, in Tower Hamlets, in Liverpool, in Doncaster, and elsewhere around the country. In FE colleges, managements have slashed budgets, they've ripped up pay agreements that they've made with staff trade unions. And there's also a new wave in all sections of education, in schools, in colleges, and of universities, of vicious victimisation of trade union activists. Last week, there was a strike in Wrexham in North Wales over the victimisation of a lecturer in Manchester. That is an issue as well. And the comrades yesterday in the rally, and also the comrades are at the RMT conference, spoke about the agenda of the bosses, the agenda of Royal Mail, who really want to get rid of the CWU, or who want to get into a position where the unions can't organise in the workplaces. And education is no different in that sense. But there's also the question of dividing the working class and dividing labour in the educational institutions as well. The FE colleges at the moment, where you have lecturers being brought in on lower conditions and terms and agreements than existing staff. Mostly young qualified lecturers that have come out of education colleges, have come out of universities, that are put on 1-year contracts and are paid much less than the staff, older staff that already work in colleges. And I think under these conditions, what we'll see is a politicisation of college and school students. We'll see a politicisation of the communities in which they live, involving the trade unions. And we haven't just got the attacks in the FE and the college system at the moment which will cause that political radicalisation, but also the prospect of higher fees in the universities, of massive debts accrued by students studying for courses, but also as well the prospect of mass joblessness, of mass unemployment when people leave education. And I think there'll be huge opportunities to build the forces of socialist students, the socialist party, and also to energise young people in the campaign of Youth Fight for Jobs. Well, I just want to come on to the universities, because I think one of the most significant political developments in education is going to be the outcome of the Higher Education Funding Review. The higher education funding review has been a discussion topic ever since top-up fees were brought in, five or six years ago. And in reality, that review has been going on ever since top-up fees were brought in. Students now have to pay £3,225 as a maximum fee in the universities. And of course, Mandelson has announced that the review will begin in the next few weeks, and it will be a key issue in the run-up to the general election. And the National Union of Students, which is at this stage the only national organisation that in words represents students at the moment, they have justified their opposition, justified their abandoning their opposition to the idea of tuition fees. And they've done this over the last 5 or 6 years. The leadership has moved to the right, and they've justified abandoning their opposition to tuition fees by saying that they will be a part of this review. That the government, big business, and the universities will also allow a voice for students on the review body. They said that they have to moderate their language, moderate their rhetoric to be allowed to take part in the review. We always made the argument, the socialist students, that the higher education review would be a backroom stitch-up between big business, the universities, and the government. And the news this week, where NUS have been told that the only contribution that they will make to this review is that they can send a letter outlining concerns to the review body when it meets. In reality, the government isn't interested, big business isn't interested, and the universities are not interested in what students think about the question of education funding. And it's an utter betrayal of students that the NUS leadership has been allowed to take this position and really has capitulated to the agenda of the review, and there will be no representation of students now in that review. Because there's no doubt that the universities want fees to rise. Universities UK, which is the body which represents vice-chancellors, has called for fees to be raised to £5,000. The bosses' organisation, the CBI, has agreed. And Mandelson has gone even further, saying that fees should be at least raised to £5,000, that maybe the most prestigious universities can go up to £7,000. We can have a variation in the fees that are charged, and even more of a market in terms of what students have to pay. Of course, Mandelson has said that the universities can only do this if they raise their bursaries. But as comrades will know, the bursaries are set by universities individually. They can be £100 a term, they can be £300 a term. It depends on the universities. They have total control over the rate of bursaries, and the government is quite happy for that to continue. So it will not be a solution. But there was also an announcement this week, which, if this goes ahead, will mean a catastrophic situation for students. The government wants to raise fees, but it doesn't want to raise the loan from the student loan company to students. It wants high street banks to make up the difference between the present loan which is lent to students and the higher loan which would be then lent if fees were raised. They want the high street banks, with all the debts and problems that those banks have, to lend a top-up loan on the loan that students get already. And of course, the banks, if any of the banks take this up, which is a big question with the state of the financial system, but if any of the banks take this up, then they will, of course, charge a higher commercial interest rate, and then they will plunge students into even more debt and financial danger. There's even talk of bailiffs and of credit checking agencies being involved in this process if students default on their loan. And of course, student debt at the moment averages at £23,000 after the end of a 3-year course. Of course, longer courses mean much more debt. But of course, if you have increased fees, if you have commercial rates being charged on the loans, and you have the rising cost of studying and of living anyway, in terms of the conditions that students face. Now that £23,000, which is already an enormous figure, it's already like a subprime mortgage for young people who have faced no prospect of paying it back. But that figure will double if these plans go ahead. And I think the review body of the government, universities and big business are talking about fees, the higher fees, as if it is inevitability. The only argument between New Labour and the Tories over this review body is who will chair the review. And I think it's very interesting to read what Mandelson said this week about higher education. He put forward this supposed blueprint for the next 15 years in terms of if Labour got into power at the next general election, they would implement these policies. A so-called student consumer revolution in higher education. And I think a lot of this is spin. It's to cloud the question of higher fees, but there are still some quite significant announcements that Mandelson made. And I think he wants to increase and further the process of commercialisation and marketisation in higher education. And it's almost taken to ridiculous levels. Degrees will now be labelled like a product in the supermarket. You will have students supposedly having the information of dropout rates on courses that they're applying for, of prospects of jobs after leaving university, and also course costs as well. But the universities themselves will provide this information, as if the universities are going to tell the truth about what happens with these courses when they're trying to sell these courses to students. But of course, Mandelson is saying, well, this is more choice. Students are now consumers. Degrees are now commodities. You know, we can bring more choice into the question. And I think it's also the question of increased privatisation in the universities. David Willetts, who's the shadow education minister, it'll probably be the education minister in the next Tory government, wants private companies and businesses to be able to design and run degrees. And of course, Mandelson agrees with him. Mandelson's buddy, Alan Sugar, is going to be brought in to run some of the courses in the London, the business courses in the London universities already. And I think, you know, the UCU, you know, who responded to the press release of Mandelson by saying that the New Labour wants universities to become like factories for workers. And I think there's some truth in that in terms of the direction that the privatisation of education is going. And of course, there will be increased funding for courses. The courses that big business wants more money for maths, for science, for technology, for all those courses that bring a quick rate of return for the private sector. But of course, the humanities courses, the arts courses will be cut back. But of course, there are exceptions. The Financial Times this week had an interesting article about a degree which is available just across the road at UCL, one of the top universities in Britain. Now, all the other languages, arts and humanities courses are being cut. But at this university, there's now a course available which is aimed at training the politicians and the leading businessmen of the future. It will feature classes on culture, on public speaking, and on diplomacy. And it has the highest funding of any degree available in the higher education system at the moment. So it's one law for the ruling class, and it's one law for the rest of us. They can have all the courses and all the opportunities they want. But in all the universities and the ex-polytechnics, then all these courses are going to be cut back. But it's an important point to make, because NUS have personalised this battle. They've said, oh, Mandelson's done this, and Mandelson's done that. He's a nasty politician, although when he was appointed responsible for higher education, they welcomed that because they thought, oh, this is a big gun being responsible for higher education. We're really going to be listened to now. But now they've turned the other cheek and said, well, look, Mandelson is a nasty right-wing politician. But it's not really Mandelson. Mandelson is the face for this agenda. It's the agenda of the capitalist class in Britain at the moment in terms of how they view higher education. Because in the period of economic boom, until the crisis, then higher education was one of the only export industries in Britain which expanded and which brought an increased rate of return to the British capitalist class. The CBI is saying that higher education is worth £59 billion to the UK economy. That's more than the car industry at this stage in terms of what it brings in to the economy. But of course, what we would say is, even from the point of view of capitalism, they don't want to invest in higher education. They want to run it on the cheap. Of the OECD countries, the advanced capitalist countries in Europe, then Britain has the lowest spending on higher education. 10% lower than Germany, 15% lower than France. But of course, they want to make this huge return on higher education, marketing higher education in a globalised economy, bringing in students from all over the world in terms of a knowledge-based economy. And now the capitalist class wants to slash higher education funding and education funding at all levels on a scale that hasn't been seen really since the Thatcher years, since the 80s and 90s, and perhaps even a larger scale if there is a more of a downturn in the economy and they make more public spending cuts and the Tories implement their programme in terms of higher education. So I just want to come on to the question of the trade union response to this question. If you want, I'll stop for a minute and you can take some seats. That's okay. So the question of the trade union fight back in higher education, because you know the question of you know industrial struggle, which was raised at the rally last night, is also raised in higher education as well. And I think what the university and college managements want to use is to use the cuts offensive, to use the economic crisis as an excuse to try and smash any power that the higher education unions have in the universities. And I think actually the majority of job cuts in the universities are not lecturers organised by the UCU, but they're admin staff, technical staff, low paid cleaners, for example at SOAS, where there is a struggle going on at the moment. Workers are organised by the GMB, Unison and Unite. But of course those unions at this stage are not leading a fight back at any levels of education. The UCU is taking a better position. It's led local disputes, but it's still a question about whether it can organise a fight back on a national level. And it's, you know, absolutely positive that the trade unions in education have come together in a defend education campaign. But of course, you know, for this to have any effect, for this to have any substance, then it does have to be based on a fight back, on coordinated industrial action across all the trade unions in terms of defending jobs, in terms of defending courses, but also winning the support of students, winning the argument against the right-wing student unions that are saying that if lecturers or staff go on strike, then this is an attack on students. So those demands of a paying of job cuts and of course closures need to be linked to the question of opposing higher fees for students as well. And I think the UCU has done a good job of exposing some of the real financial position of the universities. Because university managements have turned round and they've pleaded poverty in the face of the economic crisis. King's College, which again is just up the road, have said that because of the economic downturn, because of the lack of demand for research from big business in that university, they have to sack hundreds of staff. But the UCU has revealed that King's College has reserves of £100 million in that university. And the reality is that the managements that talk about cuts, necessary cuts, we have to tighten our belts and we can't afford to spend money on campuses anymore. The reality is, it was them who bankrupted the universities. It was them who brought in private companies on PFI contracts and allowed the privateers to rob university budgets. It was them who expanded campuses, not for students but for big business in terms of building swanky buildings for big consultation centres for big business. And now, of course, the universities have lost money. The private sector doesn't want to invest. But why should students and staff pay the price for their financial mismanagement? And the reality is, they're just like big business, just like factories and private sector workplaces. The universities are run by a minority of very rich people, vice-chancellors, that say that staff cannot have pay rises, have awarded themselves 9% pay rises this year. The average vice-chancellor earns £120,000 a year. That's the basic salary, and of course there are all the perks and privileges that exist from being in that position. And what we would say is that there should be anti-cuts campaigns of students and staff set up around the universities that take up the question of fees and free education as well. And Socialist Students has been approaching the trade unions on campuses across the country for joint campaigning. And whatever attitude the student unions take, in local student unions, some of them, like Sussex Student Union, for example, has played a good role in terms of linking up with staff around the closure of courses. But a lot of student unions have taken a position of supporting the university managements. The universities have bribed them. For example, at the University of Glamorgan, the student union has been told if you don't get involved in anti-cuts campaigns, you can have a new building for your student union. And what we would say is that with or without the student unions, socialist students will mobilise to support students for action taken by staff and action taken by campus workers. And we would say that the national there needs to be a national response to national attacks. There needs to be a linking up of all these anti-cuts campaigns. It demands the scale of the attacks, demands an effective national response. And of course, in the public sector, the Socialist Party would raise the idea of a 24-hour, one-day general strike. And in education, we should say that this should happen as well. A one-day shutdown of universities, colleges and schools based on industrial action, mass public demonstrations of staff and students, organised walkouts and strikes from students as well, that would be organised by trade unions, student unions where we can win the argument, but also through campaigns like Youth Fight for Jobs, the campaign to defeat fees, other education and working class campaigns that exist. But of course, you know, that was what we would aim for in terms of building resistance to the attacks on education. And that might seem a long way off in terms of what is happening in the universities, where we have a relatively quiet situation in terms of there are local protests going on, perhaps of a few hundred students against courses that are being cut. Of course, in February, we had a national demonstration against the tax on education, attracted over 1,000 people, and social students played a key role in that. But it's still quite a small-scale opposition. The role of the NUS doesn't help because it doesn't organise struggle and give students confidence to fight back. But we would say that it has to be the long-term goal of the student movement. And I think as we see struggles increasing in higher education, then this question will come onto the agenda. But we believe a socialist strategy is needed to mobilise the mass of students and link up with workers on campus. And what we would put forward is a transitional socialist programme. And the question that the labour movement and the student movement has to face is how can this mass opposition be mobilised? Because the UCU wrote an interesting document betraying a generation, and the conclusion of the document was that students would come into activity if tuition fees were raised. The argument of the UCU leadership is that the raising of tuition fees will be as unpopular as the poll tax. And I think this could be true. You know, absolutely. The increase of fees is going to provoke mass opposition in terms of public opinion across British society. And the Guardian did a survey last year when they interviewed people about the position of students, and the majority of the population in Britain is extremely sympathetic to the to the idea of students fighting for free education. 60% said the fees shouldn't be charged to students. But of course, there will be mass public opinion opposition. But how can that mass opposition be mobilised? And the question of the poll tax is an interesting question, because the poll tax was an attack that was brought in the early 1990s, and it was defeated. The Tories had to retreat, and Thatcher had to resign. And it was extremely unpopular. It was opposed by millions of people across the country. But it wasn't defeated by its unpopularity alone. In fact, there was a debate in that campaign between people who said, this tax is going to be so unpopular, if we get 100 celebrities to not pay the poll tax, then the poll tax will be defeated. But our argument, the argument of Militant, which is the predecessor of the Socialist Party, was no, we can't just get 100 celebrities not to pay the poll tax, but to organise a mass movement with the active participation of millions of working class people, young people and students across the country. And it was 18 million people that were organised in the campaign against the poll tax, who refused to pay the poll tax and took part in actions against bailiffs and against the court system. And of course, it was a visible campaign with mass rallies, mass demonstrations across the country. And of course, this campaign was coordinated by a national organisation, by the Anti-Poll Tax Federation, which was a broad campaign involving trade unionists, young people, young employed students and working class communities as well. And the backbone of that campaign was a revolutionary organisation, the Revolutionary Marxist Party, the Militant, which is the predecessor of the Socialist Party. And what we would say is that it would take a movement working towards this strength, because probably you'd have a situation where you could have a mass movement which wasn't as strong as the poll tax movement, could defeat the government on the question of fees. But a movement that worked towards that scale. A mass campaign has to be the key objective for the student movement in terms of forcing a right-wing government, whether that's the Tories or New Labour, to scrap fees and to stop education cuts. But of course, we face a significant obstacle. The whole student movement faces a significant obstacle. And the lack of an organisation which is willing or able to mobilise students on a national basis. And we should discuss the question of the National Union of Students, because its leadership is right-wing, pro-New Labour. They view themselves as having a career, a possible question of an MP. The president of NUS, Wes Streeton, at the moment, will probably be a prospective parliamentary candidate in one of the safe Labour seats come the general election. They're not willing to lead a struggle against the government, and of course, they'll play the role in terms of letting the Tories win the next general election. But it's not just their political outlook, but they've succeeded in removing most of the democratic structures, if any existed, of the National Union of Students. It now resembles an ineffective lobby group, not a real union that fights for students. And in this vacuum, we can't fill this vacuum at the moment. Socialist Students is a powerful student organisation organised in over 50 universities across the country. But we aren't big enough to fill the vacuum left by NUS. No one in the left, even if the left all got together, we still couldn't fill that vacuum. And it's a question of how can we build a militant student organisation that is prepared to defend students. And it's not going to happen overnight. It's going to be a process which will be dictated by struggles of the working class more than anything else. And in reality, in Britain at the moment, you can see the situation is relatively quiet in the universities. This could change very quickly if there are big struggles of the working class, but also students could move into action and then spur a movement of the working class. It can happen in one of two ways. And this crisis will definitely create a situation in the not-too-distant future where there will be big struggles in education. And when you have big struggles, then the question of a national student organisation will come onto the agenda. Perhaps the NUS can be transformed. Perhaps a new organisation will have to be set up from the existing student unions that want to fight and other campaigns as well. We can't answer that question today. I don't think that obviously comrades will have their own opinions. But this discussion has to take place in the student movement. There's a need to build a real broad left student organisation with mass participation and roots on campuses. That doesn't mean that we're just going to wait for a mass organisation. We want to start to build one now. But of course, building Socialist Students, building the Youth Fight for Jobs in campuses and colleges and schools around the country will raise that question. And of course, we're willing to work with others on the left, with student union officers that want to fight. But of course, it's not just a question of calling networks or calling committees into existence, and then all of a sudden you have this organisation. In the same way, it's the case with the question of a new political party for the working class. If you create all these structures without a base in the universities, then the reality is you will not get anywhere very fast at all. It's a question of discussion and of learning through experience of what we can do in terms of building the student movement. But what we would say is that any organisations that are created have to be fighting organisations. They can't be based on the idea of collecting together all full-time student union officers in one room and saying, there we have an organisation. They can't be built on the basis of compromise, on the basis of not having a clear socialist programme in terms of fighting back, in terms of calling for free education, and in terms of putting forward the idea of a mass movement. And what we would say is that we have to put forward in practice, show an example in the local anti-cuts campaigns that exist in the general movement against fees as well. And we hope to do this on the 28th of November with the Youth Fight for Jobs demonstration, that we can organise and mobilise people, that we can have democratic discussion and debate within our organisations. And we're prepared to work with others on the left if they are prepared to operate constructively. But also it's a question of what tactics should be used as well. And that's a debate which is taking place in the student movement at the moment. And of course, the question of occupations have come back onto the agenda. Earlier this year, there was a movement against the war in Gaza, where occupations and sit-ins were seen in universities across the country. I think at one stage, there were around 20 universities occupied, and over a period of 2 months, about 30 universities were occupied around the country. And of course, in those occupations, some of the largest occupations had hundreds of students involved, but of course it went down, you know, to a handful in some cases. And I think that was a good experience for the student movement in Britain. It raised the question of occupations, and it also taught activists a lot about what to do in terms of fighting back, not just on the question of Gaza and international issues, but also in terms of education as well. And I think what we should look at is the struggles of workers, some of the recent struggles of workers that have taken place across the country. For example, the Visteon workers, who occupied three car factories in Belfast, in Enfield and Basildon. And of course, those occupations of those factories were successful in terms of forcing the bosses, a multinational company Ford, to grant concessions. Now, it was a fight for jobs, and that demand wasn't successful, though. The comrades of Visteon did not win their jobs back, but they won redundancies, when in reality, when they were sacked at 6 minutes' notice, the bosses weren't going to give them anything. So, you know, we would call that a victory or a partial victory in some senses. But was it just the occupation that won those concessions from the bosses? The occupation definitely played a role in Belfast, where the workers stayed in for the whole period. The workers were removed by bailiffs in Basildon and in Enfield. But the struggle continued nonetheless. And the occupation was an effective tactic in that instance. But it wasn't just the occupation. It was the mass support that was mobilised across the trade union movement, across the working class, where you had mass pickets outside the factory gates when bailiffs tried to get in to remove those strikers. And when the strikers came out from the occupation, there was the question of removing machinery. And the mass pickets stopped the moving of machinery as well. There were also mass demonstrations in those areas as well. And of course, it was a key intervention of the Socialist Party, particularly of Rob Williams, the Linamar convener, in that struggle was important as well. And the lesson we take from that is that student occupations are not the only tactic that we can use. And when they are used, they're not the only tactic which is available. The occupations should go alongside mass demonstrations, alongside student strikes, alongside blockades of campuses, perhaps as well mass campaigns, if non-payment, if they're possible, if fees are raised in the next academic year. And of course, all these actions, all these tactics, have to have the orientation of appealing to campus workers, but also the wider working class as well. So when using the tactics of mass opposition, we have to be flexible, because I think, you know, some on the left, some on the student left in particular, have a bit of a fetish about the idea of occupations. And I mean this in the most kind of constructive way. But, you know, occupations of whatever size and nature are the most effective tactic of resistance that can be used by students. But I think you have to have a flexible approach. If you're going to occupy a university building, you have to have a stated aim as to what you're going to occupy in terms of what effect it will have on the university. Is there an exit strategy if the occupation is unsuccessful? Because I think you have to, you know, have a thought out strategy, because otherwise the actions of students can be isolated. And in some cases, the Gaza occupations, they were isolated. It was a small number of students who were then removed by campus security, or even in some cases, the police. But also then a mass appeal is taken out towards the student body and campus workers as well. Otherwise, if these actions are isolated, if they're not explained properly, then in the worst case scenarios, they can be met with the opposition of campus workers and the rest of students. And I think there's a campaign in Ireland, the broad campaign, called Free Education for Everyone, which our comrades in Ireland are involved in. And I think it's a bit of a model, really, for how the student movement could operate in Britain. And it's not too far away. It's not a mass campaign, this fee campaign, but it involves a sizeable number of activists. It's working towards building a mass campaign in the situation in Ireland, where they've used any number of tactics, occupations, blockades, mass demonstrations, in terms of democratically discussing what is the best way forward. I just want to come on to the question of the struggles internationally, because when we talk about tactics, I think it's very significant that we've seen big occupations by students recently in Austria, but also in other countries across Europe as well. And it's extremely significant, and it's the music of the future, that these big struggles, these big mass struggles, have erupted across Europe, in Italy, in Greece, in Germany, on a smaller scale but still significant, in Austria, in the Balkans, in Belgium, in Ireland, and in other countries. In Austria, this over the last few weeks, a massive movement has begun with occupations of universities across the country, but also mass demonstrations as well. And of course, in Austria, 8 months ago, you had school student strikes in all those cities as well. The situation in education in Austria is electrified. There's a mass struggle going on against what is called the Bologna process. And what is the Bologna process? Well, the reason why we don't hear much about it in this country is because, by and large, it's already been implemented. The Bologna process is the capitalist class in Europe looking towards the capitalist class in this country and following their model in terms of how higher education should be run. The Bologna process is an overhaul of higher education in Europe, where all the gains that were won in the past, in the mass movements of 1968 and the 70s, the gains of students not being charged fees, of mass participation in higher education, all those gains that were won are now trying to be eradicated by the Bologna process. Until 1999, in most European countries, students were not charged fees for higher education. And of course, that was the beginning of the process, the Bologna process, and now we have, 10 years later, in most European countries, some sort of fee being charged for courses. And of course, in countries like Spain and Austria, where you have mass unemployment, just like you have in this country, then the effects of Bologna are exacerbated by the economic crisis. And a new generation of students and young people is now having to confront the question of not just cuts in education, of not just attacks on their right to learn, but also the prospect of mass joblessness as well. And there's a growing political awareness that in the debts of bailing out the banks, the debts that have been created by bailing out the banks will now be paid for by slashing services like education and some of the rights that people have. Now, I haven't got time to go into the movement in Austria. Perhaps in the summer and in the discussion we can talk about that more. But it's an extremely interesting struggle. But one of the features of the struggle so far in Austria is that it's not so much an anti-capitalist struggle. At this stage, the demands that are raised by the students are very immediate in their nature, in terms of no to fees, stop cutting courses, more money for the education budget. And already it's been successful in terms of the Austrian government has said that they have to put €34 million back into education. Not enough, but still a concession. So quite immediate demands at this stage. But that will change, and it will become more anti-capitalist in character, and it will become more a question of what can be done about the system that creates this situation. I just want to use the example of what's going on in Ireland. Because in Ireland, over the last few years, you've had a struggle against the introduction of higher registration fees. And of course, free education for everyone has played a key role in that. But the question of the Irish government, where, like in Austria, you have an unstable coalition right-wing government. In Ireland, it's Fianna Fáil, the traditional party of Irish capitalism, and the Green Party, supposed to be a radical party, but now in coalition with Fianna Fáil. And they've stepped back from introducing higher fees because of the opposition that's been created by campaigns like Fee. But the main reason is because of the political and economic situation in Ireland, where on Friday in Ireland you had tens of thousands of workers and young people demonstrating in towns and cities across the country. Reflected in the election of Joe Higgins, the Socialist Party MEP, the opposition from the working class and from youth in Ireland, which is beginning to get bigger and bigger. But it's a question as well of what the capitalist class is going to do in Ireland now. They retreat in one sense from introducing higher fees. But they want workers and youth to pay another way. And the NAMA legislation, which is basically a bank bailout, which is going to be paid by the ordinary taxpayer in Ireland, 54 billion euros, which is going to cost to bail out the financial system in Ireland. And of course, that 54 billion euros perhaps isn't going to come out of higher fees, but also it's going to come out of massive cuts in the schools in Ireland, massive cuts in the universities and the colleges as well. And of course, in 2010, the question of higher fees will be raised again. So what that shows is you can have a mass struggle. You can force the government to retreat or halt their attacks. But then the question comes again, perhaps in a matter of months, of the government implementing the same attack. And I think the students involved in Ireland, but also in Austria, in Germany, where the universities are now occupied in solidarity with the movement in Austria, that those students will go for the experience of fighting back and creating a movement, perhaps winning a victory. But then the capitalist class comes back again and implements an attack. And it's a question then of what we can do about the system. Now, in my concluding remarks, because I am going to wrap up now, the conclusion that has to be drawn is that the lesson from Europe is that mass movements, combined with the strength of the working class, can disrupt and halt attacks on higher education. But as we know as socialists, students alone are not going to be able to transform the university system, transform individual universities into a socialist education system without the support of the working class. And what we would say is that a permanent, fundamental change is needed in terms of changing society, and that the working class can lead that struggle, and students can play an auxiliary role in that struggle as well. But it's a question now of what capitalism provides in terms of providing basic goods and services for people around the world. But not just basic goods and services, but whether capitalism is able to utilise the talent and the experience and the wealth that exists in society. And higher education shows that the bosses and their system are not able to do this. A talented generation of young people is now coming out of the universities. But look at the figures of graduate unemployment. This year alone, since January, graduate unemployment has gone up by 44%. Recruitment of graduates is only happening now in the public sector by and large. But of course, in the public sector there will be 700,000 job losses if the Tories form the next government. And reality now, in British society, the crisis in education combined with mass unemployment will lead to a socially explosive phenomenon. The question of the educated unemployed. The educated unemployed is a question for the neo-colonial world, for countries like Pakistan, India and Iran, where you have millions of young people have no place in society because there are no jobs that exist even though they've been through education. Well, that feature is now going to be part of the trend in British capitalism. The reality is that the bosses will use this situation. They will use educated, unemployed young people as a battering ram, as what Trotsky called a reserve army of labour, against organised sections of the working class, where you'll have students brought in who cannot find jobs, graduates that cannot find jobs, that will then be brought on lower terms and conditions to existing workforce. It's already happening in Royal Mail, the question of the postal strikes, where you have these centres set up in Dartford, where 5,000 young agency workers are working and scabbing on the strike of the postal workers. And, you know, the reality is that students will be forced into that situation. So we have to say that they are attempting to divide the working class and young people. And that with the Youth Fight for Jobs campaign, we have to pose the idea of a united struggle. And with this demonstration on the 28th of November, where the demands are raised for real jobs and for free education, that can be at the start of a process of a united struggle for the working class. But it's also necessary to put forward a socialist alternative. Because under capitalism, education will always be run for profit, not for the benefit of society. We need to fundamentally change society for humanity to realise its potential and grasp all the knowledge that's available. And that's why in our programme, in this programme of Socialist Students and the Socialist Party, we fight for a free education system, free at the point of use, fully funded, publicly owned and democratically run at all levels.